I'm Lillian Vasquez with Lifestyles on KBCR. Thanks for listening. On July 4th and over the 4th of July weekend, fireworks are sure to be going off in your neighborhood or on display at a local venue. On today's show, I wanted to share an interview I did last fall with Paul Zuza as part of our series we call Jobs You Don't Always Think About. Paul is a pyrotechnician with Pyro Spectaculars by Zuza. Pyro Spectaculars by Zuza is one of the largest fireworks company in the world, and it's located right here in the Inland Empire in the city of Rialto. Paul will share the history of the industry and his family history as he is a fifth-generation pyrotechnician. It's our 4th of July show. My interview with Paul Zuza is coming up next on Lifestyles with me, Lillian Vasquez, right after the NPR newscast. This is Lifestyles. I'm Lillian Vasquez. This is my interview with Paul Zuza, a pyrotechnician that was recorded last fall, but I thought today was a perfect time to share it again. My guest is Paul Zuza. He's a show producer with Pyro Spectacular by Zuza. So what is a show producer? This is a segment we're calling Jobs You Don't Always Think About. What's involved in becoming a pyrotech or pyrotechnician?
So my job is kind of unique in that it combines both creativity, art, sitting at a computer mixed with a lot of on-site manual labor. Fireworks is an ancient art form. Every culture celebrates with fireworks in some fashion. Fireworks is sort of a dirty job.
That's funny. Well, it's a job that you kind of inherited, and I'm sure you had a choice if you wanted to carry on the family business. But let's talk about the family business. It started with your great-great-grandfather, Manuel, who began the whole thing. Can you tell a little bit about your generational history there?
I'm a fifth-generation pyrotechnician. My great-great-grandfather emigrated from Portugal, from a small island in the Atlantic called the Azores. Traditional European fireworks, especially in the sort of Latin countries of Italy, Spain, and Portugal, most of the firework celebrations were around religious festivals, especially with the Catholic Church. And that's a lot of how we started back in the day. My great-great-grandfather was putting on very small festivals for the church and local community celebrations and fairs like that. And it was very much a mom and pop family affair. You know, regulations were different back then. I'm pretty sure things were fabricated and put together in garage spaces and things like that. And everybody in the family worked towards these small productions. It wasn't a company per se at the time. The next generation down, my great-grandfather was a chemist, and he actually came up and made pyrotechnic formulas, and we actually still have this old recipe book that's you know, yellowing and written in pencil and has various chemical compositions to make the various colors that you see in a firework spectacle. World War II would happen, and the chemicals themselves would become not available due to rationing for war resources. The family business sort of faded out for a handful of years. My grandfather would take it up again, working for a company called California Display Fireworks in Northern California. So he got an offer to move down here to Southern California and to become the president of California Display Fireworks' Southern operation. Within a few years, there'd be an opportunity to buy out the ownership group. And in 1978 or 79, Pyro Spectaculars itself was incorporated. Our main client was Disneyland.
Wow.
And we packed and produced most of the Disneyland shows back late 70s. The other big thing that happened was the bicentennial of our country. And that really ramped up what you understand as 4th of July fireworks in the modern era. The bicentennial really picked off. Communities were putting on 4th of July shows for their citizens. That does still make up a big core of our business, which is community fireworks shows on the 4th of July, whether that's the city sponsoring them or a civic group like a Kiwanis Club or a Rotary Club, that sort of thing. So my grandfather really helped innovate the industry as a whole. He's a pretty big figure in the industry.
Robert Zuza,
both here in America, but also internationally. He's really well known for his safety implementation and procedures, as well as just a, you know, general basic knowledge on fireworks. And he helped pioneer electric firing. The electric firing really added to the safety for the technicians, but also provided another layer of art that hadn't been touched upon too much before that.
And then your dad?
And my dad got to sort of be the visionary in combining the electronic firing with synchronized with music. What we call a sky concert, we synchronize fireworks directly with music. And my father was a real pioneer in that art form. He took over in 1992 as my grandfather retired, and he's been our president and CEO ever since. I started working for the company full-time as within 2 years of getting out of university in 2001. I was involved early. It's a family affair. My grandfather was one of my first mentors and had me involved at a pretty early age. Even when I wasn't old enough to touch fireworks, there was so many other non-explosives related tasks that I was, even sweeping floors, things like that. So
sure,
work
just
ethic
exposing
was,
you to
yeah.
to the work ethic
yeah.
of it all. What's involved in becoming a pyrotech? I mean, I don't know if people always think, I want to grow up and be a pyrotech. So tell me about it.
It's best to sort of answer the question from the California state perspective, because we're a heavily regulated state. And so there's a procedure for how to get a license in the state of California. You have to do at least a 2 years apprenticeship. Mm. And in that 2 years, you need to log at least 8 displays and then collect 5 letters of recommendation from different licensees. So the state really wants you to expose yourself to different workflows by basically having at least 5 different supervisors over the course of your apprenticeship. There isn't a lot of stuff written down. Like, you don't go to a book and study.
Right.
In terms of our standard workflow and our standard operating procedures, we've actually been developing some online classes to aid in people interested in learning the pyrotechnic trade, because the test that the state will give you is basically memorizing the state laws, like how to and standard procedures that the law is not the doesn't prescribe how to do those things.
My guest is Paul Souza. He's a show producer for Pyro Spectacular by Souza. We're talking about jobs you don't always think about. How does one get the training, the exposure, the experience to get those mentoring hours in that you described?
We're pretty active in the industry, both on the regulatory standpoint, but also on the training standpoint. Not just the technicians, but we also work with training the fire inspectors as well. Fire inspectors aren't necessarily exposed to what fireworks can do, both the good and the bad side. Mm-hmm. We host an annual training seminar for the technicians and multiple training seminars for the fire inspectors themselves. We've been working for the last few years just constantly putting how-to videos up on
YouTube.
Yeah, on YouTube on how to be a pyrotechnician, basically. We also try and capture people's interest through our website. We'll have a lot of people email in and say they're interested in becoming a pyrotechnician. We capture all their information and start to call them and contact them and get them out on shows. Recruiting and maintaining a pool of qualified technicians is important enough to us that we pay for their training.
Is there a lot of jobs in the industry, and is it a dangerous job, or has it changed over the years? Tell me about that end of it.
It is. The word explosives is attached to fireworks. And so anytime there's explosives involved, there's an element of danger. The risk is still somebody's life is possible to be lost. Mm. And it happens from time to time in certain accidents, but not enough that we should spend too much time talking about it. The likely injury a technician will receive is probably like I accidentally hammered my thumb or
sure.
scraped myself on a,
and
on a piece of wood.
It's changed over the years too, compared to when your great-grandfather was doing it to today's time. Are things more computerized?
There's a handful of things that have made it safer. The manufacturing processes, most of what we order is made in other countries, mostly in China as well, due to, you know, cost factors more than anything. The product reliability coming out of China has increased, and the safety of the products themselves. And then on our end, from a technical standpoint, how we shoot the displays with electronics adds to the safety. The traditional style of shooting fireworks, which is still done all over the world, is to light them by hand. And so you're basically as close as a Bic lighter to the fuse. And that puts the operator in some sort of exposed situation, being that close to the ordnance. With electronic firing, we're able to have the technicians further away. And that separation distance just innately enhances the safety of any shoot.
How do you put together a show? How is it produced?
Start at the beginning, which is with the supply chain, because fireworks are still handmade, and the lead time to receive the fireworks is 9 months or greater. And so for the 4th of July, We're already preparing our orders for next year right now. 4th of July really starts a year before. Figuring out what worked, what didn't work, and reordering. And then also looking for new stuff to spice up. Want to always have something creative and new. So that's the first part of the process. The second part of the process that we do, Pirate Spectaculars, is to test all of our product as it comes in.
And where do you do that? Or physically test, like we go up into the sky?
We basically do a display of our own.
Okay.
It's in a secret launching location up in the high desert, somewhere in San Bernardino County.
All right, that's good.
The purpose of the test is twofold. One, we want to do quality control on the safety of the devices. Sometimes the stuff isn't built to spec, and we have to fail it. Doing that before we're exposing public or public assets to fireworks incidents is important to us. If something didn't come to spec, we could pull it out of the lineup before it ever goes out to a public display. The other thing we do is do a lot of data collection on the timing, what we call the pre-fire time, which is the time it takes from when you launch the firework to it bursts in the sky in pretty colors. That's a handful of seconds. And then the duration of the effect itself. And then we put that all in a database, because what we call scripting or show design is done on specialized computer software. A customer will typically pick the music for a soundtrack.
Okay.
And the length of the show. Most of that, we work together with the customer on trying to find what they want, what their sweet spot is. Typical post-game baseball shows in the 7 to 10 minute range. And usually our clients will provide us either the soundtrack themselves or a list of songs, and we have a full recording studio, and we could put together the soundtrack.
Oh.
After that, the show designer puts the soundtrack into some software, listens to it, and is able to punch in where the individual wants fireworks to go off. And then it's sort of like color by numbers at that point. We're dragging and dropping from our database of shells and different effects and rockets and whistles and things like that. We put that into a timeline. And then we download it into a firing computer. And then the firing computer has all the data that we collected from the tests. So if the show designer wants the firework to go off with the beat, the computer looks at the pre-fire time and shoots it ahead of time so that it goes off with the beat.
After a quick break, I'll continue my conversation with Paul Sousa. This interview was recorded last October. It's part of the series we call Jobs You Don't Always Think About. Today's topic is becoming a pyrotechnician. When we come back, Paul will share some of the names of fireworks and how they go boom. You're listening to Lifestyles. I'm Lillian Vasquez. My conversation about pyrotechnicians continues with Paul Sousa.
I, of course, love the fireworks, and the greatest show I've ever seen in my lifetime is the 4th of July. I was at a national game in D.C., and it was the best fireworks I'd ever seen. It was fabulous. I don't know if that was one of yours or not, but it was terrific. You know, when you go to Disneyland, sometimes you'll see the smiley face.
Yes.
Do you name each of the fireworks, or are they numbered?
They are named, and a lot of the naming process is in a very traditional manner, both from Japan or China, which is where the origination of fireworks was. Mostly the effects are named after natural phenomena. So either things you see in the sky, stars, comets, mines, moons, Saturn. And then the other natural phenomena that most of the fireworks are named after are floral patterns.
Yeah.
So we have chrysanthemums, peonies, dahlias, willows.
I was going to say, what's the one that comes, it looks like a willow.
It's called a willow. Okay. And then in the modern era, if it's a pattern, like a smiley face, it's just, oh, that's smiley face. Yeah. But the smiley face pattern looks just like that inside the shell. So the effects that go in the air and blow up, we call those shells.
Okay.
A typical shape is that of a sphere. We name them in size by the diameter. And so most aerial shells, they go from 2 inches up to pretty typical to shoot up to 10 inch in America, but they go as big as 24 inch for specialty shows. So the 8 inch and 10 inch basically look like a basket. If you were to cut that in half and look inside,
that's
you would
the
see the smiley face pattern.
Got it.
Challenge with that is what opens up the shell and causes all the pretty colors is what we call a burst charge. That's made out of gunpowder. You have to basically trial and error, as in the manufacturing process, how much gunpowder you need to maintain that shape
pattern.
as it expands in the explosion.
That's very interesting, because sometimes I've seen the smiley face where it really looked like a smiley face, the two eyes and the smile.
Yeah.
And other times it's been a little lopsided.
Yeah. You know, it's also difficult to make the consistency when you're making thousands of something.
Sure.
We go to China every year and pick specific vendors.
What about
we want the high quality. And just like a car, you could get a Kia or you could get a BMW. There's a wide range of performance and cost.
Where does the colors come from?
So most of the colors come from salts and sometimes metals. The composition that would make blue usually uses like a copper base. The composition that would make yellow is, I believe, strontium. And that's just part of the color. Pyrotechnics needed an oxidizer. What makes it a pyrotechnic is that it will burn independent of the air in the atmosphere. Like if you were to make a campfire, you need three things to make a fire. You need heat, you need fuel, and you need oxygen. And a pyrotechnic device provides its own oxygen through chemistry. And so to get the color, you do need the salt to create sort of the color as it burns, but you also need an oxidizer to make it burn.
Got it. You know, sometimes when you're watching a fireworks display, there tends to be some lulls. Does that mean something's gone wrong? Don't you want something going up displaying constantly, or do you want the lulls in there?
Yeah, a little of both. Depending on how long it is, it could have been a malfunction where, you know, we hit the switch and nothing went off. A typical rate of fire is pretty much every 3 seconds you want something going off. Yeah, and we're doing a lot of stuff to music nowadays, and so there's an art form. You know, just like an essay, you need to have a beginning, middle, and an end. I like to at least play with the crowd's emotions a little. And so, you know, switching up tempo to make something interesting, it needs to be repetitive enough to be
engaging,
to be predictable, but also not predictable that it's boring. So you have to play with predictability and chaos a little to make a good presentation. So sometimes the lulls very much
are planned.
Planned.
Okay.
Especially in between songs.
Sure. Well, that would make sense.
Yeah.
But not all fireworks displays have music with
Correct.
Them. So,
yeah.
You know, the ones that are really big, but then the big boom comes and you can feel it in your tummy.
Yeah.
What is that? And why do you feel it so strongly?
That's typically a salute, and you feel it so strongly because you're approaching a higher order explosive at that point. Its intent is just to make flash and noise. It's using a lot of chemistry that does that. You feel the boom because the sound waves are coming so fast.
Did you take chemistry in college?
I'm an electrical engineer, so I was forced to take at least a semester of chemistry.
So let's talk about what it takes to put the finale. I mean, everybody's always waiting for that. I almost get, okay, when's it starting? No, that's not it. No, it's coming. No, and I'm like, why don't I just sit back and enjoy it instead of being so anxious for the finale? Because the finale is so wonderful. What goes into making the finale?
Well, the finale is usually trying to shoot a lot of stuff off in a short period of time. And the way we achieve that is through a thing called Quick Match. Now, if you remember the Mission Impossible, gunpowder burning,
yes,
that's how gunpowder burns, all slow and timed. If you confine it with paper or some other material, you could get gunpowder to burn at about a rate of about 60 feet a second. And that's what we call Quick Match. And so in order to get the finale up in such a short time, we're actually chaining all the effects together with Quick Match. And so you get one ignition point and then just a rapid conflagration of the Quick Match causing all these shells to go off in a very short period of time. You know, you might find that a third of the entire show goes off in the finale in terms of like the shell count or the count of effects. Yeah.
And what's a typical, I think you did say that a show can be at a baseball game, maybe 7 to 10 minutes long, which is but what's a typical city, not necessarily our cities here, but any city, is it 20 minutes?
I'd say for the 4th of July show, you'd see a range of 15 to 20 minutes on average.
Right.
And then...
And what does something like that cost?
It could vary.
From what to what? Just give it a...
I bet I'll give a variety on, like, any shows. There's, like, a couple thousand dollars to six figures, depending on the scope and complexity of the display itself. You know, we do high school homecomings and high school graduations, and those are, you know, a couple thousand dollars.
Okay.
We do... very large-scale displays that we've done a handful of Olympics and Super Bowls, you know, multi-location displays or multiple rooftop displays, and those could easily get into the six figures.
My guest is Paul Souza. He's a show producer for Pyro Spectacular by Souza. We're talking about jobs you don't always think about, and he's a pyrotech. Actually, he's a show producer, but talking about the industry and people learning would be more pyrotechs, right?
Yeah, pyrotechnics, yeah.
Okay. Where are you placed? So do you happen to do the 66ers?
Yes.
Locally? Okay. So let's just give that as a visual for me.
Yeah.
Where would you be placed?
The 66ers display is shot from the field. We have to prepare all the pyrotechnics on carts and wagons behind the right field fence. After the game's over, we drive the wagons in on golf carts and place them at center field, and the display is produced and shot from the field.
What are your more recent creations that in your generation that you've seen?
What I like about my generation is observing this sort of clash of technology. The firework technology itself is thousands of years old, and computer technology is only, you know, decades old. And we're using computers to program, design, and shoot the fireworks now. And so that's where most of the innovation is being made. The marvel for me is matching thousand-year-old technology with decades-old technology.
Okay, so finish this sentence if you can. I never thought we would be able to...
Oh, I never thought we would be shooting fireworks from a hot air balloon.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, that's not what I thought you were going to go with, but did that happen, and have you done that?
It did happen. There's an artist from China, Cai Kogong, I believe is his name. He's pretty prolific at this point for using gunpowder as a medium. The concept that he had was he wanted a 1 kilometer ladder to be affixed to a hot air balloon. And the original concept was to do it in L.A. at Griffith Park because the observatory's there. We wanted, like, the Earth to touch the stars thing. And so we affixed a ladder to a hot air balloon. The concept was a kilometer. We ended up, you know, we did a shorter test of about a 50-meter ladder and put fountains all over it.
And did it work?
Yeah.
Yeah. What's your favorite firework?
My answer's more cheesy. I don't have a specifically favorite firework. What my favorite part about fireworks is putting smiles on people's faces, and I'll get chills. So the bigger the crowd, the more cheers you're going to get, and when that happens, it's really blissful for me just to hear that, like, tens of thousands of people cheering for the work that I did.
Okay, that's cheesy.
Yeah.
So my favorite is it goes off, and then you hear the little crackles. What is that?
So we call that popcorn, and it's almost a staple in my shows because it's a, like, proven audience reaction.
It's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Because you get the display,
yeah,
and then you get the...
Yeah.
And then they kind of fade.
Yeah.
So there he is. My guest has been Paul Souza. He's a show producer for Pyro Spectacular by Souza. Thanks so much for your time. It's been fun talking and learning about this industry.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Part of learning about a job is also learning about their salary. I asked Paul about income. He was reluctant to share that information. What kind of money does this pay?
I mean, you could live off of it. Yeah.
Is that the best you're going to give me?
That's the answer. You can earn a living, raise your family.
You're not going to give it to me?
No.
Okay, got it. All right. That's our show. If you'd like to hear any of our past shows, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles. While you're on our page, leave me a message or a suggestion for a topic idea that interests you. Thanks to all who helped to make this show possible, including David Fleming, Sharina Wadd, Sean Houlihan, and executive producer Rick Dulock. Our theme music is provided by Ethan Fortnick. I hope you enjoy your 4th of July weekend filled with barbecues, friends, families, and fireworks. Be safe. Thanks for listening. Join me next week at the same time for Lifestyles with Lillian Vasquez. Bye for now.